So, welcome everyone. Welcome. We're continuing the theme of birthing the heart. Can everybody hear me? There's nothing I can do if you can't. So this is an important theme, and I want to read a passage by the Buddha that really sets this theme's theme. It sets its intent, it sets its fullness of force. This is what the Buddha is supposed to have said. Liberation of the heart through love. It is in this way we will train ourselves, by liberation of self through love. We will develop love, we will practice love, we will make it both a way and a means, take our stand upon it, store it up, and thoroughly set it going. I really enjoy that statement because it's unequivocal. And whenever you approach the Dharma in whatever direction you assume your way to be, sometimes the path of wisdom, sometimes the path of the heart, there's a directness and a fullness of intention that has to be there for the path to really work in the direction it's intended. And I think that statement is so clear in that intention that we will make it both a way and a means, take our stand upon it, store it up, and thoroughly set it going. That the statement itself is really the statement of what this particular series is meant to do, which is to stir us in the direction that really is a kind of, as a direction that most of us feel most satisfied in taking. Wisdom direction can be a little bit austere in some ways, perhaps a little too direct, we can feel it to be too isolating, too focused and forceful. No, it's not any of those, but that's the way we can interpret it. But the path of the heart, because many of us were grew up through the Christian tradition, feels like a comfortable seat to take within our ongoing spiritual practice, even though we may no longer be Christian, or we could continue to be Christian. It doesn't matter. But it sets a way of taking this issue up called the heart and really moving it in a direction that's meaningful and purposeful in accordance to the Dharma. And when he talks about the way and the means, I love that because he doesn't deviate with a lot of choices here. He doesn't say, well, he doesn't give you a big toolkit. There aren't a lot of different ways that you can approach this subject. This is the way, this is the means, you know, this is it. There's one word here. And so we have to use that word and invest within the entire journey. Now, and he also says, which I love, it is by this method that we will find liberation of the self. We will find liberation of the self through love. I mean, some of us, again, we wonder how this self will ever be understood. And he makes it very clear that it's not going to be through your force of will. It's not going to be through any antagonism. It's not going to be through any indirect means. It's going to be through each of our willingness to invite the best of us the best from us to see what we are about. And so, again, he's unequivocating in his direction, in his means, and what this is meant to do. And it doesn't leave us with a lot of choices that I mentioned. We just have to start the journey with that intention. Now, the first question is that what is love? I think that's a fair word to ask. It seems kind of like one of those words like God, or, it's sort of remote. We each have perhaps a personal understanding of what it means, but often that's tinged with kind of a romantic history of what it has meant to us personally. But what does he mean by the word love? And how do we access it? How do we initiate it once we know what it means? And then how do we embody it once we've accessed it? So those are the questions, I think, that are very important. And tonight I'd like to provide a pragmatic way towards this subject. Because the word love itself, as I mentioned, can be misinterpreted. And we need some word that's very engageable, that's very interactive, that's very accomplished moment to moment. And I think the word kindness fulfills that script. Kindness feels within reach, doesn't it? It feels like something, I can do that. I can do kindness. Love, I don't know, what does that mean? But kindness, I can do that. Well, let's make no mistake about it. Kindness is love. In fact, the Dalai Lama has been known to say that his whole Dharma practice is kindness. And he gets up every morning at 3 a.m. or some ungodly hour, and does hours of practice. What's he practicing? He's practicing kindness. And so let's take this word kindness and really move it forward so that it has some fulfillment in our journey, some way that we can access it, some way that we can get our hands around and apply it. So the first thing is, do I have any intention to be kind? Because he's saying here that without full-hearted intention, that nothing's going to work on this path of love. And so, we kind of like it when we don't. We're sort of a grumbly kind of species. If it fits us in the moment to be kind, and we're feeling uplifted because we've had a good day, then maybe, real change will get a couple of dollars. But in the odd moment, in the many odd moments when circumstances don't fit that particular generosity, we find ourselves very contracted inside and unwilling to move with any sense of kindness. So the first thing that we have to realize is that we block our kindness through a number of different ways. But one of the most notable ways is through our sense of self-judgment, self-criticism. It's how we stay tuned into our mind, because we can't, when we start asking the question of kindness from a mental frame of reference, what we stare back at is our judgment, because we're not kind enough. And where was I then? I wasn't even in the picture of kindness when I passed that guy, and I wasn't gentle or smiled or kind, we're always losing this competition, this inward sense of idealism that we have about who we are in relationship to our kindness. Now, the Buddha he says this is the way and the means. So he doesn't give the option of saying, well, I just wasn't up to kindness and that last meeting, that last interaction. He doesn't give us a way out of this ways and means. Yet, our minds are constantly belittling the benefits of whatever we're doing because, I mean, after all, how kind are we compared to the person next to us? So there must be another access point or another way to use this as ways and means instead of our deliberating and judging ourselves constantly with every act we take. So the question is, what is that, you see? Is he asking or is he requesting that every behavior we do is in accordance to our definition of kindness? Or is he suggesting that we hold ourselves in kindness regardless of the behaviors we emit? Change of reference, complete change of reference. The mind being what it is, you can forget about being an idealistically kind person. You'll never manage it, no matter who you are. It just isn't the way the mind works. The mind doesn't give us that benefit, that conviction. But how we hold our behavior, how we allow ourselves, see ourselves, that can be forever kind. What it means is switching out of the mental frame of judging and comparing ourselves and the act that we just did with other more idealistic people on the earth, like a Mother Teresa or Gandhi or whoever we might hold and cherish as our ideal, to just the simple awareness of what we are doing. Awareness of what we are doing is the kindest, most gentle frame of reference that we can always hold ourselves within. Awareness holds no judgment. It isn't condemning the lack of what we just did. It simply reveals and shows us what we did. And so it is a frame of reference, like the frame of a picture, that always holds us in kindness if we're willing to frame our perception from there rather than from the mind's interpretation of how kind we were. This is reachable. This is doable. Because then you pass the person on the street and you're grumbling and you're in a bad mood and my God, you've given X number of dollars a day that to people who were begging and you're just intolerant of the next person you face. And you don't give the money. And inside you're full of self-criticism. And you just relax in that moment. You don't hold the tension. You just relax in that moment and allow yourself to be kind to yourself. See, do we know that part? Do we know access to that level of kindness? If you ever do, if you ever get even a glimpse of how awareness holds our entire integrity, you will know love for the first time. True love. And perhaps for the first time in our entire life, it will be love without differentiation. It's worth the ways and means of our practice. Could somebody turn that off? See, otherwise we never let ourselves really fully into our heart. We think that somehow the methods we use will somehow get us to that point, that crescendo where we actually believe ourselves to be kind. But has it happened? You see? Maybe for moments. But we're talking about the ways and means. We're talking about the full representation of yourself at all times. We're not talking about the odd moment here and there when you actually feel good about what you just did. You see, why is it that we spend so much time with self-appreciation in the practice? Why is that so important of a foundation to build ourselves? Because you can see when you're contracted, when you are forcing yourself to try to live up to your expectation, you falter. And the old assumptions which say, I'm not good enough, come in and get reinforced. I mean, we love metta because I can, in my imagination, I can love everyone, all beings, right? Well, how about the store clerk who gives you the false, wrong change? You know, what about the guy who cuts you off on I-5? See, may all beings accept him or her. You see, or more obviously, may all beings accept myself. It's the sense of not feeling deserving. That can change. That has to change. The behaviors are going to stay all over the map. But what does have to change is the willingness to accept ourselves under the influence of something far greater than our judgment. Something that allows us to recognize that we're not the only thing in the picture. That there's something else here. That there's awareness. And that it is unremitting in its a willingness to appreciate and feel deserving. And then, kindness isn't a conclusion about ourselves. It's an ongoing interaction. It's up close and personal. It's the way I reach for my cup with sensitivity rather than with blindness. It's the way I drink from that cup. It's the way I connect. Because now the connection isn't coming from a sense of rules. It's coming from a need to interconnect. To lay aside my individuality, my selfness, and to discover the broader sense of myself through interconnection. And the more I do that, the more I live within this sense of awareness that is blessed awareness, because it's devoid of any contamination of mind that says I should be all other than. That looks at the rule book, the spiritual rule book, you know that one that says you should never be angry? I was at a teacher's meeting a few years ago, and the Western monks were also part of the teacher group. And we are sometimes privileged to the inward discussions of the monks, which I always like, because I know there's a human being back in there that not always well represented by the robes, but and the what was going on was that, you know, some of them were complaining that they were never that any sign of anger was completely unacceptable within the monastic, this monastic order. And they felt stymied, you know, they felt oppressed because they couldn't really be authentic with themselves or even explore anger if it was off the chart of acceptability. And so some of them were bringing in private therapists, believe it or not, so that they could work with this subject. Well, one of the freer ways that being a layperson allows us is the exploration of whatever is coming into the field of our attention. It doesn't have to be condemned or condoned. It's like the whole field. I want to know the whole consciousness. Whatever is out there, let me see it. Let me get a sense of it. And wherever I'm restrained, wherever I'm in contraction to any part of myself, that's the place that I most willingly need to go and explore. Because it's that place that is where I'm most contracted and unaccepted. And that part is unacceptable to me. Anger being one of them. We each have our areas, don't we? So what does that look like? You see when you... We're always going to be up against the mind's relationship to anger, which is it wants the self-righteousness. It doesn't want the exploration. It wants the power from the anger. It wants the force of the anger, which is the righteousness. This is the reason I was angry. It doesn't want the exploration. The exploration ends the righteousness and eventually imparts the kindness. Whatever we explore, whatever you know more about someone, the kinder you'll become to that person. Because it's through the willingness to understand something that you can see the reason that the person acted the way they did. And almost always, from an unskillful behavior, what motivated it was pain. And when you reach that point of understanding the pain in the other person, kindness is the result, is the meeting of that. So this everyday kindness, that's what we want to... That's what we want to access. There are many ways that we can lose ourselves, but the Buddha is saying there's only one way that we can be found. Let me look. Let me see. That is the most gentle expression of ourselves. Let me see what's going on. That's what kindness does. It moves into, want to explain, it wants to understand. It moves with that gentle sensitivity. And like the person who cut you off in the lane, in the car, if you knew that motivation, if you're willing to see that motivation, your empathy would impart to that person. So too, if you're willing to see your own motivation, the pain from which much of our behavior is derived. If you can access yourself with kindness sufficiently so that that motivation is seen, rather than the knee-jerk response, which is to protect awareness from admitting that that lives within me, then what happens is that that kindness, that compassionate kindness, also is revealed within that observation, within that attunement. The same thing that we're often more willing to give to someone else than to ourselves, that self-understanding. Kindness is not something that we have to force upon us. In fact, you can hear, the reason I love the word is because it really denies words that we usually use to try to, you know, like discipline and force and even effort. Somehow kindness, you just don't feel like that's going to, it's not going to access it. But what does access it is simplicity. If you want to know what a warm heart is, just go outside and be quiet and look at something. And let your everyday worries just melt within that surround. And just allow yourself to tune to what it is that's going on you. And within a minimal amount of time, if you truly allow yourself to settle, you'll find you have a warm heart. You'll find the heart warming itself. That simplicity of purpose and intention. Very, very easy. The willingness to slow down, because I think busyness today is perhaps one of the greatest hindrances. And we're just adding to that busyness, the adding to the productivity. We're caught in this whirlwind of, driven a lot by our lack of kindness, by our need to accomplish in order to be seen from a positive light through our accomplishments rather than through the negative assumptions we hold of ourselves, trying to persuade ourselves that there's something relevant about who we are. Something precious about who we are, though we can't feel it in our bones because we have such self-dislike. We try to speed ourselves up so that we can do more, so that we can have a higher appeal, self-appeal. And that just increases the busyness. It doesn't allow us to access kindness. It takes us from it. We have to tune ourselves to life. I mean, tune ourselves not to the hum of some kind of inward production, but tune ourselves to life. If you just look around, how you're going to tune yourself to what you see is by being present to what you see and moving at the rate. And I don't mean the rate of speed, I mean the rate of perception. Perception has a rate itself, right? People can be moving fast, but the perception itself is very quiet and simple within that speedy momentum. And if we tune ourselves to the rate of perception, like do it right here. We're just looking around, not from the inward need to make something of the situation, but the actual settledness within the situation. See, it doesn't require everybody stopping. It requires me stopping with everybody. And then you start being affected by what we see, and being affected by what we see is the access door to kindness. That's how kindness enters. And of course, another important quality of kindness is that it doesn't avoid pain. kindness, and I'll get to this in a moment, is not the indulgence of comfort. Kindness is the willingness to be universally kind, and that again in the Buddha's brief quote, to move it into everything, everywhere, unlimited. You see how inclusive it is. It's never exclusive. It's always going out. But most of us have such a need to be comforted that indulgence becomes the near enemy of kindness. Self-kindness and indulgence, right? So which way am I going? You know, I'm taking a bath. It's really nice, warm water. And I can add a lot of other dimensions of classical music and a glass of wine, and I don't know what else you want to do that. It can go all out, right? So where, you see, but then I took a bath in order to be clean. That was the kind thing to do in body. And to relax, which is also a kind thing. But where does that razor edge move away from self-kindness to indulgence? Because any single action can be either from indulgence or self-kindness, and one who's outside looking in would not know. For instance, if you were tired and you needed to sleep beyond the alarm, then that would be the kind thing to do, is to turn the alarm off and go back to sleep as long as you weren't missing an appointment or something. But having had sufficient sleep, turning the alarm off because it feels so comfortable to stay in bed, now you've moved, you see? So there's always this edge that we play upon. And because most of us really want to be comforted deeply in ourselves, we want to be held by comfort, that will often overstay our welcome, or we will intentionally move around the difficult because we just don't feel up to it. We don't want to do that. Just give me some respite, right? So, is that unkind? Not if we're aware of what we're doing. If we're aware of the indulgence or need for indulgence, then there's no judgment about that. But if we try to be slippery, to be sneaky in the indulgence game, and make our whole practice from that particular posture, it just doesn't work. I was teaching out at Hollyhock a few years ago, I think with Christina, and so they had a meeting with us. We were there a little earlier than the retreat started, and they wanted to know whether we wanted the hot tub. We said, no, we didn't want the hot tub. You don't want the hot tub? No, we didn't want the hot tub. So how about the masseuse? No, we didn't want the masseuse. And they kept giving us, you know, because it's not just the retreat center there, it's a resort. So they have all the accommodations of the resort, including incredible food. So to make it into a retreat center, you have to kind of shave off some of the excess, you know. But on retreat, some of the yogis would come to us and say, we noticed there was a hot tub. And we would say, would that help you? Because if it would, please take it. If you're going to lose yourself in the hot tub, then I wouldn't. And I don't think a single person used it. Because it becomes obvious when you realize what you're doing to yourself, that much of what we do to ourselves is to get lost, to miss the perceptual simplicity. Now, there's a second near enemy to kindness, and many of us have fallen into this rut, and that's niceness or sweetness, right? So first, just get a sense. All of us have known somebody who's genuinely kind, and just get a sense of that person's presence. You can feel kindness in a different quality than niceness. When somebody's kind, there's something about it that bathes you within their attitude. It's beautiful, really. Now, we've also known people who were nice. Well, it's nice to be nice, I'm not ridiculing, but it's very different than being kind, isn't it? I had a friend who was a very nice person. And she was a candy striper in the days when they used to have volunteers at hospitals, and they wore these frocks that were candy striped. And she was just, all day long, she was just being nice. And she left one day, and she balled up her candy striper outfit, and she just threw it down. She says, "I'm never doing this again. I can't stand it." And she was sick and tired of being nice, she said. And so it can be, because it's inauthentic, or can be inauthentic, it starts rubbing on you, you know, but you're always cheerful, you're always pleasant, you're always, and it just can't sustain itself. And so we're not looking for niceness here. We're not looking for to be cheered up. Kindness is on a very different track. Kindness, remember this and it'll clear up a lot, kindness is always inclusive. Right? Whereas niceness usually has a background rub where we're trying to be. We're trying to present ourselves as. And oftentimes it's from a sense of being malnourished, really. We feel we're needy for positive connection. And we do that by trying to change ourselves sufficiently so that we can invite that positive connection from others through forcing ourselves to be nice. It just doesn't work very well. So if that's your tendency, my suggestion is to look at the pain that may be driving our need to be nice. Is it because you're afraid of what's back there if you didn't act this way? And you're trying to overcompensate for anger? I don't know. But it's worth the exploration. And when you do that, you're being kind to yourself because you're including part of yourself that's unknown. Anytime you move back to further find out what the manifestation is resting upon, what assumptions, what motivation, that is an expression of inclusiveness and also an expression of being kind. So kindness doesn't stop. It keeps moving further and further back, more inclusively. That's why the Buddha said, liberation of self through love. It's because the inevitability of the way kindness moves is it keeps including, keeps looking, keeps seeing. Why? Because it's wherever we're stuck is an area of pain. And it wants us out of pain. And so the kind thing to do is to understand where we're stuck. And so wherever we're stuck and we release that stuckness, guess what? Eventually, the sense of self has no other rub to form around. See, it is what it is because it's formed around a sense of self-protection from hiding from all of the different ways that it feels at odds with its ideal, with its expectation. But if we have no expectation, if we have no self-ideal, if we're willing to explore the pain of needing to be idealistic, which is pain, why would I need to be idealistic? It's because I hold myself with such contempt that I hold this banner that I'm moving towards and relish that journey. It betrays the sense of pain I'm in. And to understand that pain allows us to move forward. I have this written, I like it, and I say, we start with love of self to discover love without self. We start with love of self. We start embodying ourselves and encouraging love through metta and other ways. And then love takes over the journey for us. And we concede ourselves to that journey. And it just keeps flushing out the areas of discord that are antagonistic to the direction love takes. And as we release and release and release ourselves into and from that discourse, then it's the love of non-self. And nothing has been, it hasn't been an inward fight, an egoistic tension. Always cringe when I hear people talking in contempt of the ego. They don't know what they're talking about when they do that. Oh, that's ego. That's just ego. That's not love speaking. That's just contempt. That'll hold it in place. That assures it'll be held in place for time immemorial. Why would we do that? As if condemning it would rid it, would get rid of it? Condemning it brings it forward. This is a ghost, not a thing. We're creating the ghost by our tension with it. Let it take care of itself. Let's you and I just follow the route, the direction of love, of kindness. Make it approachable. I can do that. I can do that. I can change the way I am in the world by just noticing and being simple with the noticing. Letting life come in rather than the tension I create with it. That accesses the awareness that keeps the momentum of love in movement, in direction, in force. But we have to have the intention. You see, like all Buddha's statements, you think, oh, I'll go the path of love. Well, that's not indulgence. Oh. So first we have to figure out what that means. And then we have to incline our mind towards it. And then we have to see that any expression that the mind presents is not love. It's a formation that can be held in love, but it itself is not love. And then we have to embody it by bringing it closer to us, by reaching, by letting every thing that touches us be an inclination towards that very thing. How I reach, how I touch, how I see. Until it becomes the embodiment of ourself. And then the heart of Christ, or Buddha, is fulfilled. Okay, Om. Can we sit for a moment or two? So the beautiful place to start is where you are now. As you sit, how do you hold the mind? Even when you're lost, how do you respond to that? The question of indulgence always comes in, because when you're on your breath, the uninteresting breath, and there's that pleasant thought that I could indulge within. Which way do you go? What's the kind thing to do in that moment? Okay. So, any questions or comments? Yes. You have to speak up. Yeah. When it's what?
When confronted with harm.
The strategies of kindness when confronted with harm. Well, okay, so you have to be careful that you don't idealize kindness in only one way. When you are seeing yourself in harm's way, the kind thing to do is to get out of there.
Sure.
All right? Or to turn the person in so they get them off the street.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Well, give me an example of what you're talking about then.
I'm driving here and I have the sign that turned off NPR when they're talking about plastic contamination in the ocean.
And the question? What do I do about that? Seems too passive.
Seems too abstract.
When she sees plastic in the ocean, kindness, the response of kindness seems too abstract. Kindness to me is very pragmatic. It's not abstract at all. It's like, there's a no to kindness. It's like people should not be putting that in the ocean. Now, what can I do to, stop that behavior? It doesn't, It doesn't say, oh, that's such a, you know, oh, fisherman, you know. It's not simple. As someone once said, it's simple, but it's not from being simpleton. Right? Kindness doesn't come, it comes simply, but it's not naive. And actions to stop harm are kind, regardless of how one perceives that. It's not submissive. It's not passive. These are all, if you have those ideas of kindness, you have to refresh the word. It's very direct. It has a no as well as a yes. But what it does hold is a sense of inclusiveness. That doesn't mean the behavior is included. It means that the world view, the direction that this is going is inclusive. The inclusive view of the ocean is one that is minus the plastic containers, right? What does it do to the people who are putting it there? In criminal behavior, it sends them to jail. In non-criminal behavior, it may sit down and dialogue with them. Right? There's no action that is outside of the realm of kindness except that which forces pain, forces tension and disconnection. So, I often get that, and I think people often use their reasoning to stay angry. And there's no anger like political anger. You know, all of us are righteous about the climate. Well, you know, I certainly understand the reason for that anger, but the anger itself doesn't invite any common meeting, any common ground. It just drives people into their separate camps, which further involves the illicit behavior. It's just not going to. The world isn't going to solve itself within two camps. Right? Ask Syria, or Iraq, or even the Middle East as a whole. That's Buddha said, only through love. Not through anger, only through love. But boy, do we try the other, it's like we'll try anything, because what the problem is that love doesn't give us the same empowered righteousness that anger does, and we like the feeling of being at the top of our game. We like the feeling of being right and telling you that we are right, so that now you're cowered into admitting it. Now we're right. I don't know. We've just got to change it, that's all. Time for one more, if there's another. Yes. Right,
so
good.
There are places in my life, I think all of us have, where we do get angry at someone, we don't accept what's happening.
Right.
And so could you say a little bit about that, the issue of acceptance versus going at it with kindness? I don't know.
Difference between acceptance and kindness is a very important question. You know, when people say, just accept things the way they are, that's not what... Accept things the way they are when I'm being brutalized and being abused? No. You don't just, okay, let me adjust my consciousness so that I can live within this abusive situation. You know, that's, something's really wrong there. Being with things is not accepting. or staying within the proximity of physical harm. Kindness isn't just, kindness is also within oneself. You know, what's happening in this situation is not tolerable. I'm out of here. That's the kind thing. It has an action associated with it. Not just accepting it and trying to release the tension associated with it. We get into that, you go the wrong way. Okay, y'all.